It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Hello there, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which we'll someday update at.
Yep, filmsociology.tumblr.com. I was about to say, on the one, but they didn't wait for a full...
The voice four. Yeah, I'm sorry, I cut you. It's cutting off Friday, apparently, here at Film Sociology. The voice you heard, somebody who's not attending the NFL Combine to watch athletes running in their undershorts. That's Kobe Slagle.
Nope.
Don't really care about the Combine. Do they have these special skills tests where they win?
They measure winning ability,
right,
and determination.
And fire and passion.
And the, what do they call them?
Momentum.
Not immeasurables, but it's another term like that,
right?
Yeah, that players have.
Yes, the 40 yard momentum.
Yeah,
the 40 yard fire and passion.
I'll be hanging out at the Ocean Air trying to catch a Jameis Winston autograph.
Enjoy that while you can. So we mentioned sports here on the film show, and of course this is the weekend. It is the Film Geeks Final Four. Academy Awards are Sunday night on ABC. I know my sous chef, we call her Emma, is still working on the menu. How's Frank working on your menu at your house?
I don't know what he's gonna have.
By the way, for the record,
chef's
Frank's
choice.
A cat. Yeah, chef's surprise.
Yeah, whatever he feels like making that day. I don't know.
Something that you can
we're
prepare
out of
without
chicken wings. So
uh-oh.
Yeah, might have to make a run for that. And
will you guys watch them Sunday? Are you gonna watch?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, I'll text you.
I mean, there's not gonna be anything else on.
Mean,
except for
Downton Abbey,
Lord and Lady,
something, something.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, actually, we're ask us on the street. We'll tell you about that story. So the Oscars are Sunday, and
the Razzies are Saturday.
The Razzies are Saturday. I do have my Razzies now. A little later on, we're going to replay my chat with director. He's also an actor and a producer, James Keach, who directed the documentary Glen Campbell, I'll Be Me, which is up for an Academy Award for Best Original Song. So, yes, it's like fresh air. We have an archive interview involving the Academy Awards. So very excited about that. All right. Opening in theaters today, and we still have films that that have been nominated that are still trickling into our fair city, and one of them opened today, and it's I'm terrible. It's either Belgian or it's French. Sorry about that, but it's called 2 Days, One Night.
Sounds English.
Except it isn't. There's the subtitles, smart guy. And it stars Marion Cotillard, who is up for Best Actress. And
Cotillard.
Well, you know, that's just, I think Jimmy Kimmel interviewed her and talked about trying to get her name right. So he did his best. But it's a drama. She plays a Belgian mother. That's why I was concerned. I wasn't sure if it was Belgian or French. There's a difference. Stop saying that. But she is a woman who is who lost her job, and her coworkers opted for a pay bonus in exchange for her dismissal. And now she has the title of the film to have all of the fellow coworkers change their minds so she can keep her job and keep supporting her family. Do we have the trailer?
We do.
Because I love playing foreign film trailers. Here's a clip.
Allô? Non. Faut pas pleurer.
C'est pas de ta faute s'ils perdent leur prime parce que tu restes. Leur dire que tu veux garder ton travail, que t'as besoin de ton salaire. C'est pour ça qu'il faut aller les voir un par un ce week-end.
Tu n'as pas de cœur. Je voulais te voir à propos du vote sur les primes et de mon licenciement. J'ai besoin de mon salaire. On en a besoin à la maison.
Mets-toi à ma place, c'est un an de gaz et d'électricité.
Mets-toi à ma place.
Tu vois, je peux pas me permettre de perdre 1 000 euros, tu comprends?
Je voterai pour toi.
Je t'ai entendu, Nadine. Pourquoi est-ce que tu peux pas me parler?
Ça va, maman?
Je veux plus que les enfants voient pleurer.
Tu dois pas te laisser faire. Faut y aller.
Mireille!
T'as pas honte, franchement, de venir nous piquer notre fric?
Non, je la ferme pas.
Il y en a quand même 5 sur 10 qui veulent que tu restes.
Deux! Les autres, c'est parce que je les ai forcés à avoir pitié.
Sandra!
T'as dû faire quoi?
Attends, Sandra!
Je t'aime.
Still think it sounds English?
No.
Okay, that's good.
Not by a long shot.
There's a number of films this year that we have talked about, like Wild, like Theory of Everything, like Locke, in which if you look at the description on paper, it may not be the most riveting piece of cinematic popcorn extravaganza. And for this one to have Marion Cotillard going from house to house, door to door, trying to ask people to change their minds over a pay raise to keep her job, may not sound like a blockbuster fare, but it is thanks to the performance by Cotillard. She won, of course, an Academy Award for La Vie en Rose. As Kobe realized it upon Google search image, oh yeah, her. She was in Inception, Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
I wish all coworkers looked like Cotillard, but the determination and the dare I say momentum, but the emotion of trying to save her job, trying to help support her kids, it almost at times felt like 12 Angry Men, only going from door to door to get this many people to change their mind. So, it's very simple. You get one answer or another. From when she goes from house to house, but she is the best reason to go see this film, and now it's in theaters, so you should go get out because I said so.
There you go.
All right, quickly. Also opening in theaters today, and the fifth Kevin Costner film in.
Now that was a good movie.
Well, I don't know, but I didn't see it. But the 2 days, 1 night is good. The fifth film from Kevin Costner in a little over a year. McFarlane USA opened today. Because remember, last year it was Jack Ryan. He was in Draft Day and 3 Days to Kill.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Black and White, with Octavia Spencer last month, and now this one. So, and another sports film. It's become like John Wayne in westerns, Costner in the sports films. You don't believe me? You're looking it up.
I'm okay. Never mind. I'm thinking of somebody else.
Okay. Somebody who's not Costner.
Yes.
Hot Tub Time Machine 2. Who asked for this besides the cast? Still hot tubbing.
Bubbles still rolling.
Still machining. and The Duff. That is happening. And the Best Picture Showcase is happening February the 21st at AMC. And they are showing at 10 a.m. Boyhood at 105, The Theory of Everything, The Imitation Game at 3:30, and American Sniper at 6:25. That's at AMC Showplace 17 and Castleton 14.
In the event that you're all caught up on your Oscar material and you don't want to see anything that's coming out this week, there are other options.
Such as?
Such as the IMA, their Winter Night Series tonight, is showing Peter Pan.
Ah, the silent version with?
Yes, with live accompaniment. And then IU Cinema tonight at 6:30, we have, I can't tell if this is a double feature or what is, but we have Compensation and Daydream Therapy from 1999 and 1977.
Very good.
And then at 9:30, The Cars That Ate Paris. Comedy horror.
Nice.
Saturday, February 21st, 3 in the afternoon from 1927, Barbed Wire.
Not the Pam Anderson film,
no,
Barbed Wire.
This is also a silent film with live accompaniment.
Cool.
And 2 days, one night at 7 o'clock at IU Cinema, if you like going down to Bloomington. Sunday, February 22nd. At 2 o'clock, we have Treasure Island.
Which version?
It says 2015.
Okay.
Actually, that might be a stage. Yeah, that's National Theater Live.
Ah, okay.
There you go. That's and cool. Then 2 days, one night again at 6:30.
And at various theaters, go to exhibitionscreen.com on the 24th at 7 p.m. Rembrandt Exhibition on Screen. You can sit in a theater and look at paintings. That's all right. And the 23rd at 5 and 7 p.m. at the Goodrich Hamilton 16. They're showing the Oscar-nominated documentary Finding Vivian Mayer. So that is out as well. All right. So, Cobe, how many of the Best Picture nominees have you seen?
Let's see.
There's eight.
One.
Which one was that?
Grand Budapest Hotel.
Okay. Going to see any of the others?
Not
really. It's not a job requirement, really. You're just
no. I'd kind of like to see Birdman.
Uh-huh. Well, you can because it's out on DVD and Blu-ray this week.
Not interested really in anything else.
Anything else? Wow.
Not really.
Okay.
That's what Bianca and I were talking. It's 24. Well, I don't know. What's your take? 24 to me personally as a movie goer and somebody that is not a critic and somebody
you didn't
that
help
does not
support
go
finance.
To movies, right, that does not go every week like you and the other guys, it seemed like 2014 was kind of a down year. There wasn't anything going into the year that I was really looking forward to that I knew about.
Uh-huh.
I mean, other than
Fault
Hunger
in
Games.
Stars.
Fault in Our Stars was cool. But to me, there wasn't a whole lot to look forward to.
Okay. I remember my list of the best stuff, and I thought it was a really good year, actually.
Yeah.
Because I look at films that don't make my top 10 and went, damn, that didn't make it? That's really good.
Okay.
But I mean, so, and that's especially with Grown Up Awards season, which we're on the tail end of now. And I remember, like, The Summer. That's always another one because you talk about the big movies. Because my three favorite big movies of the summer, Guardians of the Galaxy, Fault in Our Stars, and Godzilla. And then we had a number of smaller films that were also...
Oh, I didn't see Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, so...
Lego movies this year,
I'm surprised
too,
I'm surprised you don't want to see Whiplash because you are of the drumming persuasion.
Yeah, I... No,
no,
not really.
Okay.
I mean, I like J.K. Simmons.
And he, by the way, that's the only lock that's really happening this year is him winning Best Supporting Actor. That's got to be a given. And I think this year, before we get to my chat with James Keach, I'll give you a few of the most important Oscar predictions ever. These are for notice the tone of my voice. For entertainment purposes only, please do not gamble Junior's college money over my picks. But I think as far as the acting categories, all four of them, they're going to have a similar theme, and it is actors getting their due. They have been around for a long time in one way, shape, or form.
So you're going to give leading to Keaton?
Yeah, Michael Keaton. And I know there. And by the way, I know there's still talk about Eddie Redmayne for Theory of Everything and even Bradley Cooper for American Sniper. But I think Keaton will be the one because everybody's loved Keaton for over 30 years, and it's a role that fits him really well.
So what are you going to do for actress then?
Julianne Moore for Still Alice. She's been nominated 5 times and has not received it yet.
Okay. Supporting, we're going J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons.
Actress supporting.
Patricia Arquette for Boyhood, because she's from the Arquette family. And it's a really good performance. That also helps that it's a really good performance.
You're going to go Patricia Arquette over Meryl Streep?
Yes.
Okay.
Meryl Streep is the best thing about Into the Woods, but it's not the best performance of the best supporting performance of the year.
Animated feature.
Big Hero 6. Although, to be fair, I've not seen Song of the Sea and The Tale of the Princess Kaguya, which is now out on DVD and Blu-ray this week as well. Did enjoy Big Hero 6. Not the greatest year for animation. And I know the Lego Movie didn't make it. And I think if the Lego Movie did make it, I would have voted for it. But that's something we can always scratch our heads about for years and years and years. What other category you want to throw at me?
Let's go directing.
I'm still going to go with... Oh, man, as much as I love Wes Anderson, I'm Richard Linklater for Boyhood, and I think Boyhood's going to get Best Picture.
Cinematography?
Dick Pope for Mr. Turner. And part of it, and there's a couple reasons. I saw Mr. Turner this week. It's opening in the theaters next week, and it's a gorgeous-looking film. But I think also the fact that, you know, Bob and Tom now know the cinematographer of Mr. Turner because at the announcement for the categories, the president of the Academy accidentally said Dick Poop. And now I think people are going to. So there's a part of me that wonders if people are just going to chuckle and realize that that name was mispronounced. But it's also fine work. But I'm pulling for Dick Pope.
Okay.
You're just throwing random stuff at me.
Let's see here. Short film.
Live action or animated?
Animated.
Animated. The Dam Keeper. Emma and I got to watch the five together. The one that probably people know the most is Feast, which was the opening act for Big Hero 6, which was about the dog and food. But The Dam Keeper is the story of an outsider. He's the title role. And trying to find a friend and trying to belong in his world. And having a 13-year-old watch it with me, there's a plot twist that happens in this that's a real gut punch. And I thought really, really effective.
Original song.
Oh, nice segue, because we're going to be talking with James Keach, who is up for his film. Glen Campbell, I'll Be Me, is up for Best Song. The song I'm Not Gonna Miss You is up against Everything Is Awesome by the Lego Movie, Glory from the film Selma, Beyond the Lights from the film, Grateful from the film Beyond the Lights, and Lost Stars from Begin Again. Mm-hmm. And I actually know some of these songs. Begin Again was really good. I like the Glen Campbell tune. Everything Is Awesome is fun for what it is. It's catchy. Beyond the Lights, I don't know, is the song Great Father, I know as well. I think they're going to give it to Glory for Selma.
Yeah.
And because it's not going to get Best Picture, and of course, the Academy apparently this year are racist. But anyway, I would like it if I'm Not Going to Miss You is going to win because, well, he's been a guest on our show. James Keach, coming up soon.
Documentary feature.
Oh, well, I would say I'm going to be snarky and say I'm still waiting for Life Itself to be nominated for documentary feature because it should. But it's Citizen 4, Finding Vivian Mayer, Last Days of Vietnam, Salt of the Earth, and Virunga. And I'm going with Citizen 4, which is about Edward Snowden. It's actually really the fact that the filmmakers got to film Snowden, especially under all the global scrutiny, it's exciting and it's really well done. All right. With that in mind, we are going to go to my classic, because that means I play it twice. If I play it more than once, it's a classic. But my interview with director, producer, actor in this. Hi. In this case, he's anxious, ladies and gentlemen. Director James Keach, director of the documentary Glen Campbell, I'll Be Me, which is up for Best Original Song. I'm Not Going to Miss You. So, James, why are you in Indianapolis besides promoting the film?
Indianapolis. We're in Indianapolis promoting the film to meet with Eli Lilly about potential sponsorship for the film throughout the world.
I'm really glad you made the film. It's really well done. Really enjoyed it, and it gives a warts and all look of what Glenn has had to go through. When did you start filming, and how long did it take?
We started filming in the summer of 2011, thinking it was going to be a 5.5-week tour, it turned out to be in a two and a half year shoot, 151 shows. The reason being is when Glenn first came out and said that he had Alzheimer's and that he was going to go out and tour, he had very few bookings, and I think most people were very fearful that this was going to be a train wreck. And as soon as the audiences saw it, they realized that this was one of the most inspiring things that anybody had ever seen. And the bookings just continued to grow, and so did the reviews. The reviews were very, very positive, and so that's how it ended to be 2.5 years. So I should say that we thought that we would be only doing it for 5.5 weeks, and we're kind of relieved at the thought of doing it because we couldn't figure out a way to make a show that was going to be uplifting and positive about a guy with Alzheimer's. The producer of his last two albums was a very good friend of mine, and he kept saying, come on, James, you've been shooting rock shows for a while. You have all the equipment. Come on, just do it. Just record it for history. Well, we did record it for history, but it also, in doing that, changed our life, changed my life personally, completely, actually. As a filmmaker and as a guy who was very, very much afraid of what Alzheimer's is and what it might do to somebody, too, being an advocate for really wanting to change the conversation about it and to really inform the world as to what we're up against and to let people see what a hero Glenn Campbell is.
Now, you said the producer, record producer, was that how you got involved with the project?
Julian Raymond. Mm-hmm. Julian Raymond was who produced Glenn Campbell, I'll Be Me, and Ghost on a Canvas. Was producing my son Johnny, who was 13 at the time, was producing his music and kept coming into the studio and saying, come on, man, you got to meet Glenn. Because I'd made a movie a few years before called Walk the Line.
Yep.
And produced it, and he said, you know, we got to do something about Glenn before it's too late. And I didn't know what too late was in the early parts of our conversation. Too late, of course, turned out to be Alzheimer's, and I said to Julian and my partner Trevor Albert, we both said to him, "Look, we made that movie. We did the biopic, and it's not that Glenn's not an incredible story. It's just that you kind of want to try and work on other kinds of pictures, you know. And you got to meet him. You got to meet him." This went on for 6 months. Finally, he said, he's going to tell the world he's got Alzheimer's. He's going to do a very short tour. Will you meet him, please? So we said, sure, we'll meet him. And Glenn, when he came over, by the way, over the weekend beforehand, we watched everything we could about Alzheimer's. And everything we saw was so, so depressing. It always showed people at the end stages of it, or the scientific version of it. Except The Notebook, which was a beautiful, beautiful film, I thought. Mm-hmm. But it didn't. There weren't documentaries that showed it. And then we met Glenn. Glenn comes into the house, and he's with his beautiful wife Kim, and Johnny's walking across the living room, and has his guitar in his hand, and he goes, "Hey, I play guitar," and Johnny goes, "Yes, sir, I know you play guitar." He says, "You want me to show you something?" And Johnny says, "Sure." And he picks up the guitar and he just shreds it. And he said, "That's what Uncle Boo taught me. You practice that, you'll be good." And then Johnny walked into his bedroom and took his guitar, and Glenn looked at Kim and he said, "You know what? A man findeth a good woman, he findeth a good thing. I found me a good thing. That's my thing." And he's talking to Kim, and then Kim said to me, "James, you know, Glenn's got Alzheimer's, and we want you to film this." And he says, "What? I got what?" He said, "You got Alzheimer's." He says, "No, I don't. I got part-timers." So you got it right up front. Here was the guy who's in love with his wife, who's an incredible musician, who wasn't afraid to talk about what was going on in his life. Oh, and here comes Johnny walking back across the living room. And Glenn looks over at him and says, "Hey, I play guitar. You want me to show you something?" So we got to see the whole thing right there, like in a period of 5 minutes.
A natural pitch.
And it was just like, wow, this guy is so, he's funny, he's self-deprecating, he's engaging, he's, and that's what he is in the film. And so just felt that, you know, 5 weeks. That's what Kim says. It's only 5 weeks. You know, it's going to be 5 weeks. You know, okay. And so here we are 4 years later. I'm still talking about it. And the film is just now beginning to begin its journey out into the world. That we were in 80 cities and did probably, I don't know, it's the best reviewed film I've ever made. And if you could imagine a man, the last song, that's a song in the movie called I'm Not Gonna Miss You, and it's the last song, was nominated for an Academy Award. Now, if you can imagine a guy 76 years old with Alzheimer's nominated for an Academy Award and 3 Grammys and the broadcast critics thing, and I mean, it's just like, who would have ever thought? That's not why we got into it. What I'm saying is that when Glenn Campbell said, I ain't done yet, and he was told to hang up his guitar, and here's a guy that, you know, we all, when, you know, given some terrible diagnosis of whatever, Alzheimer's, cancer, heart disease, whatever, a lot of us just go, okay, poor me, and go sit on the pity pot, and that's the end of it. Instead, he said, nope, I'm going to keep playing until I can't play anymore. And in so doing, what he's doing is he's shown the world a way to, the Alzheimer's, he's shown the world a way to live, and his family, the caregiving. It's just, it's a beautiful, beautiful tribute to a family. And for me, as a film, I don't know.
You got it.
Yeah. I got to do it.
Yeah.
You know, which is 1,400 hours of film. I got to do it. Yeah.
So you had not met him before this?
No, I didn't. I had not. They knew of me because of John Cash, and they knew people, obviously, that knew John Cash, and John Cash was a dear friend of my wife's and mine, and was the godfather of my kids, and he asked me to make that movie. So,
well, I'd say the amount of footage, and I know you said you shot 1,400, but the amount of footage, warts and all, ups and downs, I wondered if you had known him, because the amount of the access that you were able to get, you know, backstage, at home. So the fact that you didn't, I mean, I think that's something to be said about you as a filmmaker, as well as capturing it with the camera.
Well, you know, I think it is something to be said about me as a filmmaker, maybe as a person. I love to talk to people. I like asking questions more than I like talking about, you know, myself. I like sharing stories of people's lives. I'm very interested in where people come from. And Glenn and I and John Cash, we all shared one similar thing. And that is, I didn't have to. All my friends when I was growing up, a little small town in Texas, they picked cotton because that's what they had to do. And I picked cotton because they did, and I wanted to go do it. So I always knew where they came from, these guys, you know, from the cotton fields and struggles with substances there was always an honesty about our conversations. And I think when I said to the family, I said, look, I'm not going to put anything in this film that I wouldn't say about my own dad. And, you know, after a period of time, at first people were reluctant. All the people on the crew, they'd look at you and they'd go, who is this guy? And then, you know, you spend enough time with somebody and you get to know their character. And that's the interesting thing about, for me, going from narrative film to documentary film, is that in narrative film you write the script, and of course the actors, when they're really, the performances are great, they trust you like the families do in the documentaries. They start trusting when you see something nuanced that, you know, you say, you know, that's really good, but maybe let's try it a little different. And they trust that you're not trying to manipulate them into something that you want to see. If you're really good, they're trusting that you want to bring the best out in them, which is a big difference, mm-hmm. You know. And I think the Campbells, they wanted to tell the true story, but they also, dignity was something very important. And I was there to help take care of Glenn. Trevor and I, we became part of the caregiving group. We would take Glenn when you know, he was having a problem or he was lost somewhere, we'd go find him. And, you know, we were there all the time. So it became a very different experience, and that's what I mean because I've become an advocate. I now understand what caregiving is about, mm-hmm. and the role of the caregiver, and how this is just, it's so important that people understand this. And we did a screening in Nashville for 4,000 people at one time, and then we did a concert afterwards. And I was the MC of the show, and the band Perry was playing, and Ashley Campbell and Delta Ray. There was the three bands that were playing after the screening. And I, to cover the time of setting up, I said to the audience, how many people in this audience, I'm just curious, how many people have been touched by Alzheimer's and or caregiving or somebody who knows? And 4,000 people stood up. And I went, and how many of you actually talked to other people about it? And almost all of them sat down. Because there's a whole shame connected with it. There's a whole, you know, embarrassment. There's the, you know, and that's what Glenn's doing. Right? He's showing us, you don't have to hide. We can understand it. We can have compassion for people who have this. And one of the things that was so moving and important to me in as a human being in making the film and really reinforced my faith in humanity was that the audience, when he would play, instead of being judgmental and when he would forget a line or something like that, they cheered him on.
Mm-hmm.
They gave him standing ovation after standing ovation for his courage. And I will say that in between, you know, when he messed something up and then he'd get it back, and when he'd get it back, he'd get it back in spades. He'd just kill it. I mean, he's still a genius musician. But it was still that spirit of and that's why it was, seeing the show was so cool, because it was like an experience. It was you don't know what's going to happen next. It's like a movie where you sit on the edge of your seat and you don't know what's going to happen. Is the teleprompter going to break down? Mm-hmm. Or is he going to play in the wrong key, which he did some nights? And the kids they learned how to really be good musicians, because he would play, he'd start in the wrong key and he would not come out of it. And so now they had to switch.
They had to adjust.
Exactly.
Well, it's funny you mentioned, because you know, Glenn did a show in Carmel, which is just north of here, and I think it was a couple of weeks before it became known, before he went public with Alzheimer's. And of course, the reviews were saying that the performance was erratic, and you know, he'd start, he'd repeat. So, you know, obviously, a couple of weeks later, we finally got the explanation as to why. But yeah, like you said, watching the show, because I remember this, I think there's a part where his wife says, you know, here's your teleprompter, here's your mark. And as an audience member, when you would see him veer right or veer left, you kind of tense up a little bit and like, oh, I hope he's all right. Hope he makes it. And you were able to show sometimes he did and sometimes he didn't.
Right. That makes for good drama, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
That's right. That's one of the things that was so exciting about it. And I was always on stage right. I had his close up camera, so that was the other thing about, you know, going from there. Usually, you have Conrad Hall shooting the movie when you're making, you know, something like that. Instead, it's James Keach, and the other guys were all shooting cameras, and it was really. It was really exciting, you know. And one night, Glenn at Carnegie Hall, he walked over to me, and he walked right into this giant close-up, and he goes, "Hey, like a rhinestone cowboy," and he puts the mic right in my mouth, and he wants me to sing it with me, and I said, "Stop it, stop that," you know. And I had to do it. I did it in the audience chair. But it was fun.
I was wondering, you mentioned, how often did he notice the camera whether it was in studio or at home?
He would notice it sometimes. He liked it. You know, he's one of those guys, it's probably like you with that microphone. You like having it in front of you. You feel good because this is your world.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn's world was being on that stage, and he liked, he wanted to make the movie. He wanted us to be around. And he'd forget it. He'd forget that we were there when one of the most moving moments for me filming was at the Mayo Clinic, and they would only allow one camera in, and that was me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're injecting him with dye to do a PET scan of his brain, and And he's there, and he wondered where I was right at the beginning. Then he forgot I was even there because I set up two cameras, and I let one roll for a wide shot over here, and I had a close-up camera straight on him. And there was, and I was pretty far back because I like to use longer lenses. I didn't ever want to get too close to him because I didn't want him to be conscious of me being there. And he just starts singing to Kim, and they go into their own world. And he trusted me as a person, so he always knew that if I was in the room, everything was okay. Somehow that if I was nearby, that he kept him calm. So the camera became a friend to him, his friend. Mm-hmm. I don't think he noticed the camera. He never played to it. He certainly never, ever did things for the camera for performance.
I also wondered if depending on what day he had of him wondering, what are these people doing in my house because of the Alzheimer's? That never happened?
Well, a lot of times what we would do with the cameras there is we would set them up and we'd walk away.
Okay.
Yeah, or Kim would set them up and walk away, you know, and it was just there. And then we would go through the footage.
You mentioned how funny he is, and I think a lot of people forget that. I mean, the guy had a variety show at one time, so we know the musicality. But yeah, seeing him working with his family, especially with his family on the road, and yeah, even talking with doctors, he's just a sunlight.
He is. He, you know, he said it in the film, "I've laughed and I've cried. It's a hell of a lot better to laugh." And he loved Roger Miller, and he would always tell jokes. He always wanted you to smile, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he still does like people. You go visit with Glenn now, and you don't know what he's laughing about, but he's laughing about something, and he starts laughing so hard that he gets everybody else laughing. You know.
Mm-hmm.
He's just an amazing, special, honest guy. That's the other thing that he would say things in his Alzheimer's repetitiveness that were very important to him. Like when a man findeth a good woman, talk about Kim, he has very deep belief, very deep faith. And he would also always talk about the importance of telling the truth, you know, and how lying's no good. And then he would talk about drugs. And if there was ever an anti-drug guy, it was him, about how it really messed his life up for a short period of time. But that short period of time, you know, was magnified into a real media thing. And I think the alcohol thing was, I think the alcohol was to self-medicate his, the beginnings of his Alzheimer's, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all this stuff, all the drugs and substance abuse and everything, it's to deal with the pain that comes from so far back in all our lives, you know, and we're trying to self-medicate the pain. I think that's just my opinion. And when Glenn would talk about his growing up and how tough it was where he came from, and the same thing with John Cash, it was tough, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure for many, many people in this country, it's really tough.
Now, not really giving away anything, but we do get to see the final concert, and I know the tour was hit. I mean, they ended the tour on the right note. I guess it was
Napa,
right? And I guess it was best to finish it here, and get out while the getting is good. I guess was that your original intent, or was that their original intent? It was just covering the tour, and then that's it.
The original intent, first of all, the original intent was 5.5 weeks.
Right, yes.
So 2.5 years later, you know, millions of dollars later, oh my gosh, you know, and maybe someday we'll get it back. But that's not the important thing. The important thing is that the world see the film. And I think for your audience that I can promise them that they will be uplifted, and it's funny. There's more big laughs in this movie than there are in major comedies. I mean, it's funny. He is so funny. Your question is, was that the intent to end it here? That was the last book show of that year. And we all felt that Glenn wasn't enjoying it as much. It was agitating him. Hmm. And yet the night before that show might have been his best show. Which is that's the thing that's so amazing about this thing. And he was still good that night. He's still, you know, Southern Nights, the song he ends with is beautiful. And it's just that, you know, he wasn't enjoying it as much, and it was getting him agitated and stressed out and disoriented. So the whole idea was not to do the show because we had to do the show because there was a need to make money or anything. It was to prolong Glenn's health. That's ultimately the idea, is to give him the opportunity to do what he loves the most. And it, because we believe, and I think the doctors that have seen the film since subsequently, that this really prolonged his journey as a musician and as a human being. Because soon after we stopped, even though the last song was done several months later, mm-hmm. I filmed that several months later with the Wrecking Crew. He went downhill pretty fast after the tour was over. I mean, we'd go and play little clubs here and there. We'd bring musicians over. One night we went to see Merle Haggard and Toby Keith was there. And we went out into the bus and played, which is really cool. and he could still just kill it, you know. But you know, it's, I don't know. Alzheimer's is a tricky thing, man. It breaks your heart. It breaks your heart when you. It breaks the hearts of the people that are around the people more than it breaks the hearts of the people that are suffering from it, at least in the end stages. Mm-hmm. In the beginning stages, when you know you have it and you're facing it, you know, it's not easy.
Well, and shifting gears a little bit, congratulations on the film getting a nomination for the song. I know will you be at the Oscars?
I hope so. Yeah, I will. I will. I'm a member of the Academy, so I'll be there. But it got nominated for 3 Grammys, too.
Yes, congrats on that as well.
Which I just think is, you know, it got nominated for Best Video for the Country Music Association. So, you know, I am not a spring chicken, and this is my first music video. So it's never too late. It's never too late. You can go out there and make your music video. I tell you that now.
Well, I'm not going to ask your age, but I do love directors with a 6, a 7, and an 8 in their age still making work. Still, I mean, I play jazz and blues musicians that are in their 90s still putting out product, still putting out work.
That's good, man.
Absolutely.
Hey, man. You know, I mean, listen, look at Clint. I did a movie with Clint with Robert Duvall.
Stars Fall on Henrietta.
Yeah, right. And I'll never forget Clint. I said, "Do you have one note for me, Clint?" He said, "Yeah. If you got the shot, move the camera." Meaning, don't do the same take twice, which is really interesting because he's so sparse, you know, in what he does. And here's the absurdity of the Academy. Here's a guy. This is maybe his best film in many, many, many years, and he's not nominated. You know, I mean, come on, guys. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, it's this. There's such politics in all these organizations. You know, if you're not a member of the Doc branch, you're not a member of the little club. You know, you're a member of the narrative branch. You know, it's if you're not a member of the narrative branch, you know, and you're a member of the Doc branch, it's just, you know, it's human nature. You know, we're all in our little cliques, and mm-hmm. you know, but Clint's work is remarkable.
Two films in 1 year.
Yeah. And one of which I did not care for at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered, what the heck did you do that for? You know, and although there was some good stuff in it, but I guess he did it because he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And that he loved that period of music because he loves music.
Yep.
You know, and it wasn't a bad film. I mean, well, I like the play better. How's that?
Sure. That's all right.
I enjoyed the play more. But, you know, for those people who never knew who those guys were, the Jersey Boys, and the kids that are growing up, your kids, my kids.
It's a good 101.
Yeah, it is. It's a good thing for them to see, and it'll live, and it'll be fine. So, but that compared to American Sniper, my God.
Mm-hmm. And I think he's been able to, I mean, you know, he retired the tough guy. He retired his Western persona with Unforgiven. He retired his tough guy persona with Gran Torino. And he's been able to direct anything he wants, whether it's Jersey Boys or American Sniper or Bridges in Madison County or Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. You know, to be able to direct what you want and have a studio backing you on that, that's rare.
Yeah, you got to be named Clint Eastwood.
Now, you said you'd filmed concert footage before. Who else have you shot?
I went out with Cheap Trick.
Yeah?
Yeah, Johnny, the kid opened for Cheap Trick for a few, for 2 years. So that's what we were doing. Cool. It was fun.
Between your film and Still Alice, there is a lot, you know, people are talking more about Alzheimer's. I've even approached by a lot of people, whether it's on the street or at festivals. You know, you mentioned the Nashville event. Has that become almost a daily occurrence now?
We have requests for around 300 screenings, and it's just going to grow exponentially, I think. And, we were reading yesterday in China, the number is staggering, how many people have it. So I think the long tail of this movie is going to be great. And I think, too, that the thing that's exceptional about it is that there's music in it. It makes it so palpable because, you know, you get to see a guy play his music, and it's good music. And the Still Alice movie and Julianne Moore's performance is really good. There's no question about it. There's not a lot of laughs, and it's a narrative linear progression from you got it to you're out of it, and Glenn is the difference. Of course, is one is real and one is imagined, mm-hmm. I think we screened it here actually at Lilly a few weeks ago, and the head of their Japanese global marketing division saw it, and she wants to take it to Japan, and so take it to Australia, and it's a huge problem in China. And the thing that's cool about it is that it's a very entertaining film. So if you can entertain people, inform them, empower them, inspire them, get them to want to make a change, we got a shot at slowing this sucker down, because we need everybody to. We need financial support to do it, you know. And I think that most people have perceived this as being an old person's thing, and it's not. The people that are going to suffer the most from it are the young people, because they're going to have to take care of the old people. It's going to break the economy, which is a frightening thing, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, just to talk realistically, 2050 it'll exceed the national. In 2025, it'll exceed the national defense budget. 2050, you'll start breaking the economy.
Mm-hmm. You said it took 2.5 years. What did you do in between? I mean, did you have pockets of time where you were able to work on other projects, or were
not
you just
really.
Kind of on standby?
No, not really. This has been my life for a while.
Well, it's not just Steve James who has the multi-year commitments when it comes to making documentaries. You are now a part of that club. So
yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
If I may, I wanted to shift gears a little bit. I wanted to personally thank you for creating The Long Riders.
Ah, good.
I got to see that with my dad when it came out. Where did that start? Where did telling the story of the James family come about for you?
My brother and I did a movie called Orville and Wilbur.
Yep.
We played the Wright brothers. And so we thought, let's play the wrong brothers. So Stacy and I, you know, he at the time, he's 7 years older, and at the time he was just starting to really ascend as a movie star. And I went off and I was into music, and I said, we'll try and write it as a country western musical. We did it as the Bandit Kings, and so we made a musical about the James Gang. I just thought it would be cool because it was the time Keith was doing Hair and Keith Carradine, and, mm-hmm. and you know, there was a lot of musicals being done, and Godspell, and it was a cool time in the theater in New York, and so we started to do that, and then
but I'm sorry, but when he says the James Gang, he doesn't mean the group with Joe Walsh. That's another group.
Yeah, this is the Jesse James.
The actual Jesse. Yeah, the actual
Jesse
James.
James, Cole Younger, you know. The Miller brothers, yeah. So we did it for a while, and we played it at the Bowery Lane Theater, and it was fun. And then we said, let's try and develop it into a movie. So we took the script and wrote the script, and then I was doing a film in Bora Bora with Tim Zinnemann. And Tim Zinnemann had done a movie with Walter Hill, and he said, what are you working on all the time? And I said, I'm working on this. And he said, let me read it. And he said, you know who'd like this is Walter Hill. And so he said, can you get all those guys? And I said, I don't know. Yeah, I think we can. So Keith was doing an album, and so we went to the record plant. It's burned down now. The record plant in Hollywood, and we got the Bridges brothers, the Carradine brothers, the Keats brothers, and we all went out into the alley. It was like 2 a.m, and we took a picture of all of us together, and we sent it to them, and that began the journey. The Bridges brothers eventually weren't able to do it, and it became the Guest brothers, Chris and Nick Guest. And the Quaids. And
yep.
The Quaids were in the picture, too. Randy and Dennis Quaid. So, yeah. So that original script, we wrote the original script, and Walter came in and did a rewrite on the script. We did a rewrite on that script, and then we went and we made it, and it was awesome.
Where'd you shoot it?
We shot it in Clayton, Georgia, Albany, Georgia, Texas, and Sonora, California, where they had the trains. We did single gauge trains.
Besides the brothers casting, which I think is a great marketing tool, not a gimmick, but I also read that Walter Hill and wanted to have a family feel on the film, and obviously that paid off not only with your brothers, but the film also humanizes these characters that we kind of grew up knowing as being notorious bad guys, and then seeing them at home chopping wood, dealing with the women in their lives. You know, that seemed more interesting than just black hats versus white hats.
Well, that's what it was, you know. It was like, you know, when Jesse's mother was and his brother was tortured, and they were, you know, you understood why they did what they did, you know, why they were so upset about everything and why, you know, they went after the Pinkertons. One of the things about wars that we don't understand is we see all the people running down the streets, you know, the Iranians, the Iraqis. We don't have compassion for the fact that they, you know, those kids are born and they're nurtured and they're loved and they're, you know, we dehumanize them in some way, which is sad. And in this case, the James gang, this was a family, and they were wronged. In my opinion, they were wronged by the North. They were, you know, and they took it upon themselves, rightly or wrongly, to seek revenge for it, you know.
Now, how was it working with Walter Hill as a director, and did he later influence you as a director?
I love Walter. Walter, here's Walter. I love telling this story. I can tell it now, years later. So we're out in front of a Corkindale barn, and there's a big shootout. And on the, you know, in those days, they probably still do. The barn, they would squib the barn. They put squibs, they put M13s or whatever things in the barn. And they would blow holes in it to appear as if bullet holes were coming through, so that you get, and then they'd backlight it so that the light would come flashing through and you'd see all these holes in the barn. So I'm out there with a rifle and I'm shooting in front of the barn, and there's this whole thing going on, you know, big raid, and about three of these M13s blow up, and they hit me in the back, and it blows holes literally in my back, you know, and blood, and my knees buckle, because I'm just it's not like I can't hold myself up. I've been hit, and I'm going down on the ground, and I'm shooting. It's in slow motion, and it's cool, and I hear Walter go, God, Keith, damn it. If you ever do that again, I'll bullwhip you. What are you talking about? They're carrying me off to the hospital. Said, you can't fall down like that. You're Jesse James. Walter, you know, I had stitches in my back and everything. He was funny. He was you know, he always appeared to be a tough guy. He was John Ford's second assistant director. So, you know, and John
he survived Peckinpah as well.
Right, he survived Peckinpah. He liked to wear the eye patch and all that stuff. You know, and but he's a terrific filmmaker and a good guy, and you know, he liked making those tough guy movies. He was good at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It also makes me want to have Ry Cooter provide the soundtrack of my life.
Ry Cooter's pretty darn good.
Pretty good.
Pretty darn
not
good.
Bad at all.
Not bad at all.
So, as you said, you're 7 years younger than Stacey. What's it like to direct your brother?
Well, now he asks me to direct him in lots of movies. For many years, he was like, hey, kid, you know. So now I think he figures I've proved myself as a filmmaker. But it's actually he was directing. The reason I wanted to become a director was because of him. He was doing a movie, down in Alabama, about an Alabama prison. And he was doing a little documentary, and I came into the editing room, and I would watch him cut it, and it was just so fascinating to me how films were put together. I loved it. So I really fell in love with the whole idea of it, and I still am in love with it. It's still magic to me.
Mm-hmm.
Still 90 minutes in the dark is magic. Going to the movies and making movies is it's the coolest thing you can do.
What are you working on next?
You know, it's interesting. We've developed a lot of narrative scripts, but I am leaning towards making documentaries. During the period of this film, because of the caregiver and all the stuff that caregivers go through, we started talking to people who've been connected with the military with post-traumatic stress syndrome, and it's fascinating to talk to them about the moral injury that takes place when you have to do things like in war that you shouldn't do, that it goes against your conscience, and caregiving, and when you're dealing with people with health, the problems that you have. So there's something very interesting to me about that moral injury thing that takes place in all of us that causes addiction, that causes pain, that causes. So I'm kind of intrigued to look at that area and to try and find, to make a movie kind of like Glenn's movie that's inspirational, but that will allow people to see and to have empathy for people who have to, like soldiers who do things like this and what they go through and how we can help them, and people who are caregivers, how we can help them and how we can help ourselves, heal ourselves. So I suppose that's something that's an area that I'm interested in. And I don't know. I think there's a lot to be said about it, and I think there's not a lot said about it.
And now that you have a title of director of an Academy Award nominated documentary, that will hopefully get a little more incentive.
I don't know. I hope so.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
There you go. My chat with director James Keach, whose film Glen Campbell, I'll Be Me, is up for an Academy Award for Best Original Song, I'm Not Gonna Miss You. So, and hopefully more people will check out that film. All right, we got enough time for the Razzies,
yep.
Sort of. Worst Picture, Kirk Cameron, Saving Christmas, Left Behind, Legend of Hercules, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Transformers Age of Extinction. I didn't see any of these. I'm really happy I didn't. Maybe I'll rent Saving Christmas when it comes out, but I think Cameron's just received a whole bunch of bad press because of the film. He'll probably get it. Worst Actor, Nicolas Cage, Left Behind, Kirk Cameron Saving Christmas, Kellan Luntz for Legend of Hercules, Seth MacFarlane for A Million Ways to Die in the West, and Adam Sandler for Blend. Probably Seth MacFarlane because everybody likes his work, but nobody wants to see him do his work.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think there's also the jealousy because he got the star in a Western where he had the bounce back and forth between Amanda Siegfried and Charlize Theron. I know. Worst Actress, Drew Barrymore, Blended, Cameron Diaz, every film she did this year, Melissa McCarthy, Tammy, Charlize Theron, Million Ways to Die in the West, and Gaia Weiss for Legend of Hercules. It's a toss.
It's really anybody's award.
It's really anybody's award. Drew Barrymore was not fun in Blended. Cameron Diaz just kind of bad in Sex Tape and Other Woman, and Melissa McCarthy, Fall Down, Go Boom, and Tammy. I don't know. That's Saturday night. Yeah, that's right. It's so much up in the air, I'm not even going to make a pick. And the Oscars are Sunday night on ABC at 7 o'clock Eastern. Here's some words to live by.
Silent Green is people!
Not up for an award. Also not up for an award. That's a shame. Go watch the Oscars. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI, HD2 The Point, WFYI.org. Go Pistons, go Red Wings.
We're going. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.